Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. This is Ken, the Passion Entrepreneur. How are you doing this morning? I'm your sales and profit evangelist, your chief profitability officer. And I truly believe, listen up, because I'm about to share some knowledge. It's not enough that you're an expert in your industry. You have to be an expert in sales and profitability too. And we'll talk a little bit about that. If you can't sell yourself, you can't sell your idea, you can't sell your product or service, you, in fact, don't have a business. If you can't run your business profitably, then you won't be in business for very long. Thank you for listening in. A3C stands for Entrepreneurship, Empowerment, and Evolution. And the C stands for Connect, Collaborate, and Create. We show you how to maximize your sales and profits and business opportunities. We teach you the best practices for profitability and sales and share with you new ideas and strategies to take your business to the next level. You check out our website at bettersalesandprofitsnow.com because you're always in business, need sales, and you need profits. We want you to listen, learn, enjoy, and share. And you check out the website on the Blog Talk Radio at www.blogtalkradio.com/E3C. The call-in number, if you want to call in, you've got a question, is 646-716-7099. That's 646-716-7099. We've got a pioneer in the ethnic hair care industry. I've got some late breaking news. Johnson Products acquires new leadership in a new era. Procter & Gamble, as you know, maybe you don't know, sold Johnson Products, a leader in African American hair care products, to a newly formed independent entity. And if you don't know, Johnson Products, they've been in business for well over 50 years. I remember way back in the 60s to 70s. So what happened? They sold their company, Procter & Gamble sold Johnson Products, to a couple of recognized market leaders in the African-American hair care products, RCJP Acquisition. And they were helped with a private equity firm, Rustic, Cannon, and Francis Partners, and St. Cloud Capital. And I want to bring on Eric Brown. Eric, welcome to the show.
Welcome. I feel this is going to be very exciting.
Yes. Yeah, you were with, should I mention the previous company?
Oh, yeah,
that's
sure.
The competition,
it's not a problem.
So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you and your wife were with Proline International. And
that is correct.
Lots of years there, and you decided to, why not own a company? So why did you decide to purchase Johnson Products?
Well, I need to kind of fill in a couple of information points. Proline International was once called Proline Corporation. I was president of that organization, that company. The company had been around since the mid-70s. It was owned by a gentleman by the name of Comer Cottrell. And we talk about entrepreneurism. He started this business with $500 and a borrowed typewriter. It was truly an American dream story.
Yeah.
Worked very hard and built it up. He brought me on board, and ultimately I became president of the organization. But in the year 2000, he decided to sell the business to Alberto Culver. I stayed on with Alberto Culver, and changed the name from Proline Corp to Proline International. I was president for several years. And then roughly 2005, I became vice president of global business development. I decided to take a corporate role to get out of a little bit of the day-to-day tactical part of the business and look at things from a more corporate perspective. And in that role, I had the opportunity to look at acquisitions. So I got a different flavor of what the world looks like when you want to be an acquirer. And then around 2006, Alberto Culver went through a major restructuring itself. And it gave me the opportunity to move and do something different and something more entrepreneurial. And during that time period, I studied the landscape. Do I want to do consulting? Do I want to go back and be in another executive? So what do I want to do? I thought about buying my own business. And since I knew this industry so very well, I decided to get my list of targets. And one of them was Johnson Products. Johnson Products, as you indicated, had a tremendous, tremendous brand equity and history associated with it that I didn't think Procter & Gamble, quite frankly, knew what they had. So I went after it.
Wow. Man. And so this is interesting. I want to take you back. You were hired and eventually became president of a company. What was it that – maybe I'm talking to the wrong person. What? How do you contribute your success? I mean, a lot of people want to join a company and become president.
Right.
What's your secret? How did that happen for you?
I think you talk about technology, and you talk about all of the various components. You talk about sales and those types of things. I would like to attribute to my success to all of those things, which are very tactical and oriented. But I think what brings it, at least in my mind, that said, okay, why, what did I do that was different than everybody else or other people, is that I layered, or I believed in strong execution, but also on the strategic side of things. And I think strategy takes form, first of all, in terms of idea and the ability to lay down the plan that connects the dots, I think, and then it's leadership. But before you can have leadership, you got to know where you're going. So that's where the connect the dots come in, and I hopefully did a good job of that. And I hopefully, you know, as we look at the past and say, what have you done in your past? Hopefully that indicates that I've been able to apply that formula of connecting the dots, getting people that are very passionate about what they're doing, and lead them in the right direction and execute flawlessly.
So what is your educational background, and why'd you pick your first company?
My education actually... I went to University of Southern California. I'm a Trojan.
All right.
You know?
Oh, okay. And I'm a Wolverine, but we won't go there.
It's okay. We can go there.
University of Michigan.
But anyway, you know, prior to going to college, though, my thought process was I thought I was going to be in high tech. Matter of fact, I went to USC with the thought of getting a degree in electrical engineering. And this is back in the 70s. Ultimately, I moved from electrical engineering to business because during that time, engineers weren't doing very well in the job market.
Okay.
So I thought I would at least, if I understood business, I would at least have an opportunity to get myself introduced into the business world. Subsequently, what happened is that my desire for technology and high tech and all of those things and my experience, because I was fortunate to work in some large computing and data centers in high school, actually, because of my engineering background at that time, I went to work for a software house. As a programmer, and ultimately got into design, software design. I then ventured out. That entrepreneur bug bit me, and I ventured out and had my own consulting business in Southern California.
Wow.
And I was doing software design, systems design, for some very large institutions. At that time, they were bank. You know, if your listeners know the name, I know how old they are. Security Pacific.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
First Interstate, Great Western Savings. At that time, they were big institutions, but they've obviously long since moved on. And then I had the opportunity to work on the significant part of the design of, at the time, was the largest ATM network called STAR. And it was part of the original design team that implemented that. And be part of that network as it related to Great Western Savings. So I understood early on about entrepreneurism, and, you know, your show title about passion, those two have to go hand in hand. Matter of fact, I can't imagine a successful entrepreneur that don't have any passion about what they're doing.
Right.
So,
and have a love for eating oatmeal when times are tough.
Absolutely.
You can mix oatmeal with it. You can put blueberries and bananas, all kinds of things, raisins, and yeah.
Right.
I've lived
that.
That's
the good times. You might have to choose one of those items.
you got a point there. You got a point there. Hey, our secret is safe, I guess. Maybe not, because everybody's going to be listening to the show. So how did ProLine find you? So you weren't, they didn't hire you right out of college. You had some consulting background.
Right, and it was interesting, you know, because I was extremely fortunate to be introduced to Comer Cottrell, actually through his daughter, who ultimately became my wife. But if you knew anything about Comer Cottrell, that didn't really earn you any stripes.
You can't sneak in.
No, I can't sneak in. I mean, his own daughter started at the very bottom of the organization and had to work her way up through it. So he was a true entrepreneur, and he was about making sure, as an entrepreneur, that you find the right people and you put them in a position where they can win, as opposed to put them in a position that there was more to them than can handle. Because now you have two problems: you have a problem with the person, and you have a problem with an underperforming position.
Right.
So he was certainly. Yeah, I guess in its way, made sure that I earned my stripes. I started out as vice president of finance, moved on to vice president of systems and planning because of my technology background, and ultimately chief operating officer and then president. So I was, I had contact at the very, very top at the owner level. But what he did was provide me with the growth curve that ultimately, when I was president of the organization, I could handle that position.
Wow.
And I think that was really, really key. But to go back to your question about what connected us two together was the fact that the conversation will probably, if I could share this conversation with you that I had with him, I was actually doing some consulting with him, and he asked me to come in and take a look at his business, tell me what we can do technology-wise, because he was always fascinated about computers and what it can do for business. And after looking at the situation, I told him that I thought his business was doing an outstanding job in terms of being able to market his products. I thought he could market it and sell his products and compete with anybody in the industry or in those that are not in this industry. But I told him that I said the longevity of the company was going to be able to manage the cost of this business because that went directly to margins. So unless he had a system, because at that time he did not, I said unless you can get a system that can make you competitive as a manufacturer on the cost side so that you can manage your profits and your margins, only then will you be able to sustain long-term viability. And I think that conversation resonated with him. And he asked me to come in and look at the manufacturing systems and provide my recommendation. And I can say from there, the rest is history because...
He gave you a deal you couldn't refuse. Well, that's interesting because I was going to ask you about profitability in a later question, but that's very interesting. So what is your website for your new venture now?
The website for our new venture is yournewjpc, all one word, yournewjpc.com.
All right, we're speaking with Eric Brown. If you want to give us a call, you can reach us at 646-716-7099. That's 646-716-7099. How's the transition been from being an employee now to running the company or running a company?
Well, I don't really – it hasn't been any difference, quite frankly. Fortunately, I've had the opportunity, like I said, to run an organization before as its leader when it was a standalone company. So I have that experience. And then also running – a company as a large division of a large multinational company. So there hasn't been anything, I'm going to say, so far from an organization standpoint that has been somewhat a surprise to me. Well, I'll tell you one thing. I've become extremely appreciative, and I always have been, but I've really become extremely appreciative to those administrative assistants out there because I lack that right now.
Yeah.
And I've always felt the importance of the administrative assistants is to save my position time.
Right.
And that is the number one goal, should be the number one goal of all administrative assistants. But I tell you, I just really have come to appreciate that position when you don't have it, you know, sort of like you know, when it's not there, you miss it more.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And we're interviewing administrative assistants as we speak, so that is a very, very important position in hire for me. So if there was one thing to answer that question, if the one thing that has really highlighted this transition is my appreciation, a new appreciation of that position. I've been fortunate to have some great administrative assistants that have helped me look good and done a great job for me. So I'm looking forward to filling that position very quickly.
All right. And so you're in a crowded market. Maybe I'm.
Mm-hmm.
What makes your business unique compared to your competitors?
Well, from a business model, there probably isn't that much uniqueness. And, you know, we have a product, and we manufacture the product, and we market the product, and then we sell it to customers who sell it to our consumers. I mean, it's a very, very simple business model per se. Now, the difference becomes how you do all of that. How well do you execute all of that? What is your, at least in my mind now, you know, other people may have different opinions, but it's really about how you, again, connect the dots in terms of what are your plans, and then how do you execute those. I've always been a firm believer, extremely firm believer, to have a solid plan, because first of all, nothing goes as that plan is going to be.
No, it doesn't. Anything can go wrong will go wrong.
Absolutely. As soon as you finish the plan, then the first obstacle falls in the way that says the temptation is, let's do a new plan.
Yeah,
but
no.
If you believe in that plan and you have the support staff to support you with that plan, when you have a problem, you at least know how to get back on the highway. Mm-hmm. You know, and I always, you know, look at the analogy of, you know, no matter where you're starting out, you're going on that vacation and you're traveling across the United States in a car, and lo and behold, you take the wrong exit. Well, you realize you're on the wrong road. But when you have a roadmap of where you're going, you just don't keep on that wrong road. Your
right.
idea is to figure out, okay, how do I get back on my roadmap? What do I need to do to get back on my roadmap? Sometimes you have to turn around and go back, or sometimes you just deviate. But at least you know where you're going. So you're not going to New York by way of Florida. You're able to, you know, focus on what it is, what's the shortest path to get me back to where I'm trying to go, which is my ultimate goal of where I see this company or whatever my plan is in getting to success.
All right. And so let's talk about the products that Johnson Products offers. What are they?
We have two pillar brands. One of them is called Ultra Sheen, which is historically very, very I'm going to say a legacy brand. It's been around for many, many years. and general treatment, which has also been around many years, but not as long as UltraSheen. And under those two brands, one is focused on what's called relaxer brands. And relaxers are products that rearrange the structure of hair to take it from a very tight, curly structure to a more straight and relaxed structure, thus the name relaxing, or the description relaxing. When the hair is in a more relaxed state, it allows it to be managed easier and styled easier. So for African Americans, this is an opportunity to express one's personality by having more style options when the hair is in a relaxed state. It doesn't mean that you have to use these products to have different styles, but it allows you a greater degree of flexibility to do that. And you either can do that in the salons or you can do it at home using the general treatment product. Now, UltraSheen brands have products that are more style-oriented from a maintenance standpoint that are used to apply moisture to the hair to keep the hair from being brittle. There is some relaxers that are in that particular brand. The UltraSheen brand tends to be more value-oriented. Thus, it's a perfect fit for the economic times that we have. So those are the two pillar brands that we are taking from Procter & Gamble, or saying buying from Procter & Gamble, that is going to really be our foundation for growing into and doing other things with it.
And so you mentioned earlier when we first started talking about that the former owners didn't know what they had.
Mm-hmm.
How are you planning to maximize that opportunity, and what do you see looking forward for your company? What is it, in fact, that Johnson Products represents? How are you going to maximize that?
Yeah, I have to start with the history of Johnson Products a little bit. And it is in the 60s, 70s, it was started in the 50s, so we go way back. And in the 60s and 70s, the company, George Johnson, had built this particular company into an icon of the African-American community. It became a representative of, from an African-American standpoint, same kind of level that an IBM was looked upon. It was a place
right.
You could go to get a professional career as an African-American that involved the community that you grew up in generally.
Right.
It involved products that for people that were also African-American. Now, from a business standpoint, it went beyond just being African-American, but its consumer focus was obviously African-American. It was the first African-American company in the United States that was on the New York Stock Exchange.
Really?
So,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it has an incredible amount of, not history, but legacy associated with it. And then it became exposed. It was the first one also to be advertised on a national television show on a regular basis.
You're talking about Soul Train.
Absolutely, Soul Train.
And yeah.
Many of us remember those days of looking at Soul Train and the advertisement
yeah.
associated with it and the power of advertising and television. And Soul Train was a very unique programming during that time, obviously, because it focused on African-American music. But it also talked about fashion and style. And we're in a fad and fashion industry, and so it established itself as a leader in fashion and style. And so to kind of answer your question and bring it forward, we have a tremendous opportunity to leverage that brand equity that this brand, the company brand Johnson Products has with the consumers that remember it. And bring about products that are more today for those consumers. Most of those consumers are probably, I'm going to say, north of 40 years old.
Yeah,
but
I was reading your website.
Yeah, we also have what we think is the most exciting part about this is the addition of building a bridge from that 40-plus, but also back down to the younger generation that has not had the opportunity to be exposed to Johnson products and what it means. And some of the, emotional and feelings that were developed over those years where it was a tremendous company. So we look forward and look forward to the challenge of putting together products that address the younger generation at the same time exposing them to the history of Johnson products, because we think that's going to be very, very interesting to them and resonate among that group. And it's a new world in terms of how do you communicate with the younger generation. I'm in my 50s, so I say younger generation. But you mentioned Twitter, and you mentioned, there are things like Facebook and all of these things
LinkedIn.
That involve technology.
MySpace.
All of these different ways that we now have available to us to communicate to various folks. Because our consumers, and even ourselves, are not in one place. There's not one place I can go and say I can get to 70% of, the audience I want to talk to.
I wish Soul Train was still around.
The beauty of back then, because everybody watched Soul Train, who was, or certainly I would say a large majority of African-American who were in that younger generation. Again, there was a younger generation that propelled Johnson products.
Mm-hmm.
And we think it's extremely important to be able to make sure we maintain our consumer base of what we have right now, but get back to being able to express what this company is all about with that same age group that now I call the younger generation. That's my daughter's generation right now.
You mentioned that the times have changed because you can go to one show, Soul Train, and know you can get your message out. But people are bombarded with, I believe, over 3,000 messages a day, and it's, times have changed. You've got to work smarter to get your message out. So I was going to ask this question later on, but I'll just bring it to the fore now and ask you, so how are you adapting and getting your message out? How are you using the web and technology to promote your company?
Well, I'm going to have to talk about it in future tense because we just getting started.
Okay.
Check back with me in a year.
We're just getting started,
Ken. What I did in terms of past tense and how successful that was. So it's really just laying down the the groundwork. But
I got you.
It is still, I think you have to make yourself or as a company accessible make sure you understand the opportunities associated with each one of those paths. I mean, look at your program. I mean, your program represents all new technology and a way to reach various consumers of the message you're trying to put out that wasn't existing even a few years ago.
No.
So we have to, first of all, be open to look at different things and try different things and explore. And be willing to put it as part of our strategic plan to execute as part of it. It's sort of, we can't just rest on what we know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of funny because we only know what we know. We don't know what we don't know, sort of thing. But we've got to be willing to listen to other people that have other ideas.
That's interesting to say that because it's so challenging for an entrepreneur because they're successful in their own right, and a lot of times they know what they know, but they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah, I know.
And that's what gets them in trouble. What would be your – that's a challenge of me being a coach and consultant and trainer.
It is.
How do you shake them up? I've got these quizzes and surveys and assessments, and I have them really tough questions that I ask them and see what kind of response I get, and that's how I kind of bust their balloon.
An organization, it's a simple answer in my world. As the leader of the organization, it's hard to sometimes do it, but you have to do it. You have to be willing to hire people smarter than yourself. That's the bottom line. And you've got to be willing to listen to them. If you're going to take the time to say, this person has got it going on, you've got to be willing to listen to them. And sometimes you have to be willing to take some chances when you don't necessarily agree with what they're saying. But if they're smarter than you in what you hired them to do, then you've got to let them do it.
Wow.
And that was something that I learned from, you know, with Proline and Comer Cottrell.
Right.
And he kept teaching me that really, as a leader, you can't be in all places. At some point in time, you're going to have to create the opportunity for other leaders to lead within their areas, and hopefully they all come together. If you look at it from almost a military standpoint, it is about, you know, the general and all of the lieutenants and sergeants and everybody understanding their role, but leading in their own area, so to speak. And he certainly taught me that one thing about building an organization. And as I speak to people, I really impress upon that ultimately you're only going to be as good as your organization, not as good as really your one person is. And the only way you're going to be able to propel it is to have people, in a sense, smarter than you. Now, you've got to have the confidence in yourself to allow that to be in the background.
Yeah.
Your own personal ego to sometimes take a backstage to some of the people that you hire from an executive on down.
Mm-hmm. Just empower them
and you've got to
lead and coach and be behind them. You know, say
You got to teach that to your other team members. That the person who's running your finance, get them to a level of comfort to say, hey, it's okay to hire a controller that maybe he's smarter than you in a certain area.
Yeah.
It's okay.
You got it. Go for it.
You know, because the end result is how good is your team, not how good you are as a single person.
You can't do it all.
No. Nope.
We're talking with Eric Brown. We could be related, by the way. But Eric Brown, Johnson Products, a new Johnson Products company. The website is www.yournewjpc.com. That's www.yournewjpc.com. So I've got to ask you this question. What is the opportunity now in the hair care industry? Because young people, they're wearing their hair differently or got less hair. Sometimes
are you
also
asking,
is there an opportunity
from a business
standpoint, maybe the market, because you got the United States, but you also have other countries like Brazil and Africa, and so what do you see the opportunity?
Are you looking at it from a Johnson product standpoint? Where do we see the industry?
Right.
Okay.
Not to tell us any of your secrets and where you're going, but whatever you feel comfortable in sharing.
But I kind of take the approach that Lombardi, the football coach, had. He said, I give my playbook to my component because it's still about us being able to block and tackle better than them.
Right. Execution. Okay.
It's all about execution. But I'm not as good as Lombardi, so I'm not going to hold. I'm not going to give away my title playbook.
Okay. All right.
But let me tell you. The opportunity within the United States, like I said, from Johnson Products, is to continue to be able to focus on the consumer. You know, if you look at our industry or just the hair care industry itself, it's reported as being flat to down, and it's been that way for several years.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I guess the question begs itself, so how do I get investors? How did I, you know, why do I want
to
be in an industry that's flat to down?
Yeah, how did you raise the venture capital money you needed?
Yeah, but I also feel that, and I was able to express this point, in that our consumer hasn't gone away. And most of our consumers, is, let's say, of the female gender, they haven't stopped doing things with their hair.
They still have
the same needs in terms of style, fashion, and expression that they always have. It's just that I think in a lot of ways the manufacturers have somewhat forgotten their goal is to really meet their consumers' unmet needs.
Mm-hmm.
So our job is, and our opportunity is, to find those products that can meet their unmet needs. At that moment in time, we're doing things that are not just stealing share from somebody else, but we're potentially growing this industry.
Okay.
So I look at it as the fact that it's flat is because we're not creating, we're not innovating, we're not doing things that tells the consumer to become even more active than they have. They haven't left, stop using hair care products.
Mm-hmm.
We just haven't done our jobs as manufacturers and marketers to say you need to do and buy more of these products or buy these products over those products and really be able to express yourself in the fashions and the the needs that your hair requires.
Mm-hmm.
So we see it from that standpoint of understanding what our consumers are and understanding what their unmet needs are and putting products out there that satisfy those unmet needs. Now, on the other hand, we can't forget that we're the economic times that we're in. So it's very important that companies and myself and my team take a moment instead of saying what we're going to do to our customers and our retail partners and telling them how to do things, but take a moment and listen to their world.
Let's
get an understanding. Let's shut up for a minute and listen, as I would say, and because from that we'll be able to walk in their shoes for a moment and put together programs and plans that meets their needs as well as part of our supply chain.
I say it's not about you; it's about the other person. The most important person you're speaking with is the other person, not you.
Yeah, I can have
two
the greatest
ears
product in the world. That you can revolutionize the hair care industry, but if it's not on the shelf and I can't get it to a consumer, then what good is that idea?
Right. So you look at them as being strategic partners to your success.
Exactly.
I've got you mentioned something, and I want to talk a little bit about that. We've got less than 10 minutes to go here. Raising venture capital. Raising money to buy Johnson products.
Mm-hmm.
The hair care product, maybe it's not the sexy thing. People want to go for the technology, the next Google. So why were you so successful in raising the money that you needed?
Well, that's an interesting question because I'd never it's almost probably a question that's better answered of my investment partners. But if I could just,
okay.
Yeah.
We'll bring them on next time.
Yeah, I mean, but really what resonated to them, certainly my goal was to speak of the opportunity, not only in financial terms, but how I was going to be able to execute to get to that financial opportunity. And in this day and age, the most rewarding piece of this transaction was the fact that we were able to get some financial partners in a period where acquisitions are not happening.
Yes, that was
flat out
very interesting for me. That's why I want to ask the question.
Yeah,
because, some people are raising money and others are not. And most people are not raising
money. I've had a lot of people come to me to congratulate me on just the acquisition of Johnson Products from that standpoint. But I've had just as many people to say, how did you do something that's not being done? People are not, investors are not investing. They're holding on to their cash because cash is king.
Mm-hmm. Right.
How did you do that? I think, to answer that question and the question that you had, one of the important things is being able to be able to present your plan and be able to show how the dots connected and really give a sense of comfort to potential investors that you have the ability to execute that plan. Certainly the passion I have about this industry didn't hurt. I do believe that this industry is a positive industry from a financial and growth perspective is it does have the ability to be extremely profitable. And I also believe that our consumer is still very active, and thus it can be positioned as recession resilient if the product if the products are properly aligned with the consumer. So there is some protection against the downturn, and I was able to show how all of that comes into play.
And your previous success.
Yeah,
can't deny that.
At the end of the day, though, it's about the team that you can put together and how well you can convince people who are going to invest in your idea, no matter if it's, in this case, an acquisition or a startup or, you know, venture capital or whatever it is, your ability to execute against your dream or the promise. And I had a great team of people surrounding this transaction that was able to, I guess, stand on its own. And, you know, earlier I talked about having people smarter than yourselves. I had people who were smarter than me in their areas to be able to show that and prove that. So at the end of the day, it wasn't just Eric Brown standing up there and doing his PowerPoint presentation. It was a team effort. And when you have a team effort, it brings comfort to anybody who's on the other side listening that, you know, it is about the team and not one individual.
Yeah, talk is cheap. What have you done in the past? And if you got a great management team, they can see that and they see past successes.
Exactly.
It does give some indication of where you're headed.
Well,
we've got less than 5 minutes. You were about to say something?
No, I was just going to just put an analogy together. Even if you look at, you know, Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls, it was certainly Michael Jordan, but, you know, if you think about it, they never say, you know, Michael Jordan won all of these championships. It was the Chicago Bulls as a team. And they'll be the first ones, and Michael would be the first one that would say it was a team effort. At the end of the day, he couldn't score 110 points by himself and stop the other team from scoring 111. So it is really about the team that you build.
And everybody had their role to play, and everybody understood their talent and their ability, and they focused their talent and ability on what had to get done to win.
Exactly.
We've got less than 5 minutes. I do want to a couple more questions in here before we run out of time. I always talk about sales, that you have to have great sales skills and expertise. So how did your sales expertise, your experience help you in your business? Maybe one point that you can share with the listening audience.
Well, in general, I think sales is certainly about, the ability to go past no, the word no, because that's generally the first thing you have to be able to do in sales. But then on the the next thing is you have to have information. I've always felt that in order to be excellent in terms of sales, you have to have information that the person on the other side doesn't have. Because with that information, you're able to formulate a compelling argument, as well as to address those objections from a data standpoint. Today, a lot of people, it is about the data. Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to express your points in data. So I really do believe that information technology is not an expense. It's a competitive advantage. So the amount of information that you have available to yourself that your competitor doesn't have should put you in a position where you're able to use your sales skills to better execute on what you're trying to communicate.
And one of my last question I want to ask, you talked about the importance of being profitable. So what would be the guidance that you like to share to entrepreneurs and business owners about being and staying profitable in challenging times?
For entrepreneurs and business owners, it's real simple in my mind. First rule, don't walk around with your checkbook in your back pocket.
I like that one. Let me write that down.
Yeah, there are so many times that we get, you know, enamored with what we're doing that we walk around with our checkbook. In other words, we as business leaders and owners start spending money that we probably shouldn't spend. Leave that checkbook with your financial person and have the discipline not to, you know, to you know, flip through catalogs and start buying everything that you say. And then number two, don't think sales equals profits.
Absolutely.
And tell your whole organization that sales don't equal profits. And then take it to the next step and realize that the incremental sales may cost you in profits. Sometimes it's you're more profitable not getting that, taking that order than you did when you had, you know, if you took that order. So make sure that every order you look at, don't let the sales number cloud your vision of cash flow or profitability. And those would be my top three, just kind of off the top of my head in terms of profitability, kind of, you know, guidelines for just any entrepreneur, any business. Because those are the two, three things that I've seen so many times. This is, well, it had a great idea, they had a good team. What happened? How come it didn't happen? And it's usually one of those threes. Either they put themselves out of business, or they thought sales were profit.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a story, I won't go into it now, but you know, sometimes you can make more money with less sales, because you got to really look at finding ways to control your costs, reduce your expenses, and it's not what you make, it's what you keep.
Yeah,
and profit margin is still very important, and there's a formula for that. I share that with my clients. But yeah, excellent. Okay,
absolutely.
So we're finishing up, Eric. I really love this interview. I've got to bring you back. I really enjoyed this. I think this was probably something you didn't think we'd go there, because standard interviews I don't like to do. I kind of like to really delve into who you are and what you're doing and what you bring to the table, because I want entrepreneurs and business owners to learn not just what we're saying, but what happened, what transpired, what got you to the point that you're at, because that's what a lot of people are lacking. They want to know, how did you do it? Now, we know what to do. Okay, how do you do it?
Yeah.
And that's the key. So,
sure.
Parting shots, anything, what do you want our listeners to take from our interview in wrapping up?
Well, I think from a Johnson Products standpoint, that there is a new Johnson Products that hopefully it resonates in my voice that we're extremely excited and passionate about the opportunity that we have. We just can't wait to start really executing our plan. But from a standpoint of where businesses stand today, you know, is the glass half full or half empty? I always look at it as, half full. And that now is about not how much water is in the glass, but how much can we put into it. So business is cyclical. And if somebody is going to make some money, why can't it be whoever, you know, fill in the blank. Why can't it be, and I'm going to say, why can't it be us? If somebody's going to do it, why can't it be us? Why do we always, you know, let's not just assume it's going to be somebody else. Let it be us.
Take charge. Be profitable.
Exactly.
Get that sale. Make that sale.
Exactly.
And your website again for the Johnson Products, the new Johnson Products company is?
www.yournewjpc.com. You can go to johnsonproducts.com and you would see the old P&G website. I think if you were to go to both of those websites, you'll see the difference in attitude.
Okay, I like that.
One is johnsonproducts.com and the other one is yournewjpc.com. We'll get to the johnsonproducts.com website and get that fixed up, but www.yournewjpc.com is where we're sending everybody.
Well, again, thank you very much for being on the show.
Ken, I totally enjoyed it.
And we'll get your message out here, and we'll make it happen for you.
Okay.
I wish you success. I know you've been successful in the past. You'll be successful with this. And if we can be of any help to you, you just let us know.
Well, likewise, I wish you all the success as well, and you're doing a great job. Keep it up.
All right. So that is our show. What have you learned today? Lots of stuff about sales, profitability, technology, being focused on what you do, hiring the people that that are smarter than you, and being humble. Don't be afraid to learn new things. And so thank you very much, Eric, for being on the show. Dare to be great, be remarkable, be extraordinary. Stay profitable, but by all means, go get that sale. Go make that money. Take care. Until next time. We'll be right back.